This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. We may have a Stanley Cup champion tonight. Vegas is the site of the Golden Knights and the Panthers, and the Golden Knights win. They are Stanley Cup champions. Panthers trying to force a Game 6 back in Florida. And the man that has the call internationally is our friend E.J. Raddick from the NHL Network. NHL Now is also a way you can catch him between the hours of 4 and 6 Eastern. And he joins us live from Sin City. How are you, buddy?
I am good. How are you doing today?
Good. I got a sinus infection, but that just comes with it. That's life. I'm just an old man.
Feel better.
But I'm okay. Just get the right antibiotic, and everything's working out great. But you might get the call of champion tonight. But before we get started with that, how has it been going calling these games?
It's been a lot of fun. I've been working with Kevin Weeks, who I really enjoy working with, and the games have been interesting. We got an overtime game winner I got to call, so that was fun. And, we'll see how things go tonight. But you're right. I mean, it'd be an opportunity to call a Stanley Cup winner here tonight. And I just think the way the series has gone, I think Vegas is in a good position to wrap things up tonight. But, that said, Colorado went home last year. Game 5 up 3-1, and they ended up having to go back to Tampa before winning it. So we will see, but this is a little bit of a different situation. I think Vegas is kind of continuing to play very well and to almost get better as the playoffs go on, and they've been healthy. And Florida, I think, has just been a little bit worn down, and they got some significant dings and injuries they're dealing with.
And are you comfortable in your broadcast area?
Well, it's better than it was last year.
Okay.
I mean, in Vegas, it's great. We have our own booth. We're up high, but we have our own booth over dead center ice, so that's terrific. In Florida, we are in the first row of the press box, so it's kind of a makeshift area, but it's not bad, and certainly better than it was last year in Tampa when I was kind of a little bit of Jorge Posada, kind of trying to call the
right
game while in a crouch. So that's something that is probably not the best circumstance. But this year it's been better. And like I said, Kevin is easy to work with, so hopefully we'll have a good call tonight. It should be, the city here in Las Vegas, people are excited. And, pretty amazing to think you could win a Stanley Cup in your first 6 years, and that's kind of what Bill Foley, the owner, laid out several years ago, 6 years. So he may prove to be Nostradamus with this one.
Yeah, and I had somebody on Twitter misunderstand when I say Vegas is due. He took it as, well, it's been so long since they won. And no, that would mean Florida's due because it's been so long since they've never won. But I think you know what I meant when I said it when we made our prediction. It's just that they've been on this course that even though it's been a short period of time, when you look at their 6 years or the five previous years, this should not come as a surprise. And when you consider the fact that they were the most consistent and best team in the West all year long, that I just think they're due in the sense that, hey, the previous 5 years have presented this case that they deserve what they're going to get possibly tonight.
Yeah, listen, they've been pushing right from the start. I mean, you get to the Stanley Cup final in year one of your existence. I mean, you've set the bar pretty high, and, they've, with the exception of last year when they ran into a lot of injury issues, and I think they were kind of resetting their team, last year during the season. I mean, I know they wouldn't say that. They were trying to win, but they went out and got Eichel, and, they knew he was going to have the surgery, and it was going to take some time for him to come back. And even when he did come back, I mean, it would have been a lot to ask for a guy to jump in who hadn't played in quite a while and was dealing with a significant procedure to come in and really be a difference maker. I felt at the time, I was like, as they went down the stretch last year, I said, I just don't see it for Vegas this year. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think that, they need a summer to reset, and Eichel to have a summer to get ready, and then just figure out some different things with their roster, and they were able to do that. And in the end, here we are, and they're just a beautifully slotted team. You've probably heard me talk about that over the years when we've work together is slotting is so important. First line center, second line center, third line center, fourth line center, you know, first KOD, second KOD, that type of thing. Guys slotted in the right position where they have the most chance to be impactful in the game. And I think that George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have done a wonderful job of slotting with this group. And you know, you think of that first team that went to the Cup Final, and that was a good group of players. But by adding Eichel as a legit number one center, by adding Pietrangelo as a legit number one defenseman, it sets everybody back into the right roles. And, you know, that was a team that didn't have a captain. Mark Stone arrives, and he becomes their first captain, and he was kind of a perfect fit for that group, too. So I just think they've done a marvelous job, and, you know, we'll see if they can finish things off on home ice tonight.
Now, you mentioned you got an overtime goal call in game three. Was that your first overtime playoff game?
No, I've had a couple of them. I had the crazy game, I think the Kadri game, when he scored in overtime. You know, that was a tricky one where no one knew where the puck was.
You know? Right.
So that was an unusual one. I had some obviously in the regular season, in doing games on our NHL Network showcase games. But as you know, when you're calling, you know, playoff games or any game that goes into overtime, right, you're hoping for a clean look. And I thought I had a really clean look at the Carter Verhaeghe goal, so that made me happy that I was able to, you know, to get that one. And I was happy with the result. But, you know from doing this, Donnie, it's, you know, you don't always get that good fortune.
Right. It's nerve-wracking. I didn't get my first playoff overtime goal until 2014, and then I got a couple, the Stanley Cup Final game one. But my first was the game one goal from I think it was Derek Brassard against Pittsburgh. And I remember we go to overtime, and I'm just walking around the hall, just like, don't screw this up, don't screw this up, and also trying to think about. You know, we could be here a while. So you got to try to pace yourself too, because you don't know, this could be forever. And if you remember, I think it was, no, Palat scored the goal. Cause if you remember the moment, Brassard hit the post, the official waves the goal off. I call it a goal because I saw it go in, but then I have to correct it because the official waves it off. The rebound goes to Palat. He scores anyway. And then so I felt pretty good because I was on top of both, because the original goal did go in. So it was originally Brassard, but it was just a wacky kind of thing. But, yeah, that's all you're hoping for.
I think I remember that play, you know, in terms of, like, it was a weird play.
Yeah, it was just kind of a, you know, you never know. You can try to plan for these things, but it's never as you kind of picture it's going to be. But
the Kadri goal last year, where the puck, you know, got caught up in the net and nobody really knew where it was, like, even from my strained position in my crouch, I thought the puck went in. But because there was no celebration by anybody and everybody kind of looked at each other, I hesitated to call it. And I think if you listen to all the goal calls of that goal, nobody really called it, because we were all kind of wondering, you know, like, usually the celebration helps you in that scenario. And, you know, even the Patrick Kane goal that he scored in 2010 to win the Stanley Cup against the Flyers, where no one really knew where the puck was. Kane, you know, there's an angle. If you're on the angle of Patrick Kane, you can really see it. I mean, even the great Doc Emmerich had a problem with that one. And, you know, but there was at least the celebration. You know, Kane celebrated.
Right.
And in this case, no one celebrated, not even the shooter. So it took us a moment. But I did, as I said, I mean, I really did feel like I saw the goal go in. But, you know, I didn't want to jump it if that was not the case. I mean, I figured it was better to wait. And I'm, you know, that's just, and you heard all, if you go and listen to all the different calls of that goal, everybody had to hesitate on that one. No one knew where it was, and there was no celebration.
That's always the way to kind of go with it, no question about it. All right, let's get down to the series. I guess a couple of things. Did you expect or think there should be any discipline, Pietrangelo, at the end of that game the other night?
No, I talked to the hockey operations group, and they said that, you know, once the game ends, the person is allowed to come out of the penalty box. And, you know, unfortunately, he didn't skate in there looking for an altercation. I mean, he was skating towards his teammates at the end of the game, and, you know, and then he got kind of, you know, kind of drawn into that. But it wasn't, he was not looking for it, so I didn't, you know, I did take note of it on the broadcast, and I did ask about it. But you know, I wasn't too surprised at it, because there's not like an armed guard over at the penalty box to keep people from leaving the box when the time expires. So, you know, I wasn't expecting anything to come from it.
And I know a lot of Panther fans up in arms with the non-call on the cross check towards the end of the game.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of penalties. There was a lot of penalties at the end of that game. I mean, Petrangelo fired the puck into the netting. Now, if you watch the play, he gets tomahawk chopped by Brandon Montour and then subsequently cross-checked, you know, which leads to the him flipping the puck out, right? And so neither one of those, I thought it was kind of hilarious to watch, you know, here a guy flips the puck over the glass after being, like, you know, just slashed, clearly, like, chopped, and then cross-checked, and he gets the penalty. There was a number of cross-checks back and forth. In fact, I thought that Brady McNabb cross-checked Bennett into the goaltender, into Hill, late in a scramble in front, and that could have really been to the detriment of Brendan McNabb, or Brady McNabb, because, I mean, there would have been no way if the puck ends up in the net, because Hill was out of position, you're not going to be able to have goalie interference, because McNabb clearly cross-checked Bennett in. But, you know, I mean, I don't know why. You know, people are never happy, Don, because there was a lot of penalties in the first four games, and everybody in the first three games, and people thought there were too many penalties and want more five-on-five. And then in the last game, there was two penalties called in the game, one with 17.4 seconds left in the game. And people were looking for more penalties. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the officials do the best they can. And, you know, for me, through these first four games, one team has been significantly better than the other. And, you know, the team that in this case is looking for a penalty hasn't scored a power play goal in four games. So, you know, the officials, I guess, are always going to be under the gun.
But I thought that there's a great example of just how hard it is to call this game, and how they sometimes officials need to be complimented when they get it right, was the Tkachuk-Eichel hit from, what was that, game three? Where, and I thought Eddie did a great job describing
it. I think it was game two.
Game two.
In Vegas.
Right, yeah. So I'm just trying to remember. Eddie did a great job describing the toe pick and how he kind of drove into Tkachuk, like, in real time. Sure, it looks like a vicious hit, looks like an illegal hit, but when you really break it down, I think they got it absolutely right.
Yeah, I think the new rule, and I don't recall if this was what took place in this particular instance, and if they looked at it, but I think this idea of calling a major and reviewing it, I think has really been helpful. Because you think, as you said, in real time, it used to be the officials then were put in a position where even if they weren't necessarily 100% sure, they wanted to control the temperature of the game. And when a player, any player, but certainly a player of Jack Eichel's ilk, is hit in a play like that, if you're not sure and you don't have the opportunity to review it, you might call a penalty there just simply because, hey, it looked like a penalty and we don't want this game to get out of hand. But I think the idea of being able to go and look at things now has been extremely helpful, because it was very clear on replay that was not a penalty, that Eichel had lost his balance and Tkachuk delivered a clean blow, and it was just an unfortunate play. I mean, so, you know, at the end of the day, they got it right. They get a lot of things right. I mean, the officials, yeah. I mean, it is hard to do that job. And they get a lot of things right. They get some things wrong. No question about it. But, you know, I think for the most part, these guys, they go out there and do a great job. And it is, as I've said to you many, many, many times, it is one of the toughest sports, if not the toughest, to officiate with, you know, 10 guys out there skating, everybody's cheating, everybody's looking for an edge, and you're on skates, and you're looking through traffic, and you don't always get a clean look. And I just think that, you know, I try to keep everything in mind when, you know, we talk about officiating. And, you know, they miss some, there's no question, but I think, you know, more often than not, they get it right.
Right. Now, that being said, a call I don't think they got right, and it didn't affect the Panthers, was the Forsling trip at the end of Game 3, which they were able to kill off and then eventually win the game, where it was just incidental skate contact. And maybe if they had a chance to review that, they might take it away. Would you want to see an avenue late in a game where a team could challenge a penalty call if they think they got it wrong, like they have in the NBA? I wouldn't want to see it throughout the game because it would just stall things down. But in late situations like that, key moments, just have an avenue for the officials to take another look.
Well, I mean, we're into that, you know, slippery slope because, you know, is it 1 minute left? Is it 3 minutes left? I mean, I don't know. At this point in time, I would say no. I mean, I would also say this, that, you know, that there was a lot of discussion about that. But people have short memories because the Florida Panthers, who were on the short end in this particular case, and you're right, they were fortunate they killed the penalty. But if you go back to Game 4 of the conference final against Carolina, Jordan Stahl was issued a penalty for kind of a similar play on Forsling in the corner, where there was kind of incidental contact. Forsling kind of went down, and it wasn't impactful to the play in any way. And that was in a minute left. And if you recall, Florida ended up scoring on that power play with the last with 4 or 5 seconds left in the game, and winning the game and winning the series.
Right.
So I had little or no sympathy for the players in this situation because, you know, teams benefit from these things. It kind of all evens itself out in the end, I believe. And, you know, I think that, you know, these things are going to happen. I've said to you many times, I mean, there's adversity in hockey games, and I think that's the beauty of this game. It's like a lot like life. There's adversity throughout the game. Guys are playing hard. They're moving fast. They got sticks in their hands. I mean, things happen. And when you face adversity, you can be upset about it, and it may be an injustice, as we see in life all the time. But you have no alternative but just to kill the penalty. And you know, in the case of the Canes and the Panthers, the Canes were not able to kill the penalty, and the Panthers won. In this case, the Panthers were able to kill the penalty, and they went on to win the game. So nothing's going to be perfect in this game. And, like, the call like that, yeah, it's late in the game. But, you know, there are other calls throughout the game that could impact the game in dramatic ways.
Sure.
So, I mean, if you're going to start reviewing calls in the last minute or 3 minutes or whatever it is, I mean, you're pretty much getting locked into reviewing them throughout the game. And I don't know if people have an appetite for that many stoppages.
No, that would not be the case at all. A couple of things before we let you go, and I do appreciate, you know, it's so early out there in Vegas and you're doing this for us.
No, don't worry.
I guess it broke earlier today that Michael Andlauer wins the auction for the Ottawa Senators, slightly under $1 billion. Your thoughts on that and, you know, the likelihood of being able to keep them in Ottawa and having a new building downtown.
Well, I mean, congratulations to the group if indeed this is going to be the case. I mean, I'm sure that has to go through a few more steps to make it an actual transaction. There's the rest of the process. But I think that the Ottawa Senators franchise is, this is a good time to buy the Ottawa Senators. I think they have a lot of really talented players within their group. I think the question will be, can they get that new building built at some point down in the downtown area in Ottawa? I think that would be a boon to the franchise. And I think that's why the value of this franchise is so high, because the potential with that building is big time. And I know the late Eugene Melnick, you know, this was kind of the yin and yang. I don't think the people in Ottawa, the people that make decisions of this sort, were enamored with the idea of helping Eugene Melnick all that much. And we will see if the new group can put this all together with the city and make it happen. But I think it's a great time for that franchise moving forward. I think there's a lot to be excited about, but there's also a lot that has to be done. So we'll see. But at least this process, it seemingly is coming to a close. And, you know, that's good news because it's kind of stretched out a little bit longer than people might have thought. And it is disappointing that You know, we had the whole Ryan Reynolds show of the actor and business person that was in on this for a while, and that would have been interesting to have someone with that kind of high profile be an owner in the league. But you know, hopefully this group will have the wherewithal to make it all work.
Are you surprised that there's still actually traction of going back to Atlanta?
Yes. Yeah. But you know, I would say this. The first go-round in Atlanta, it was in the 70s. And it's a different era. And the league was in a different place. And so, okay, it didn't work. They went back in the, you know, the early, late 90s, early 2000s, and the expansion rules were not nearly as favorable as they are now. And that franchise never really gotten traction in the standings. And Don, I remember you saying this years ago about teams like, you know, that Carolina, Atlanta, or teams that come into different places. You need success. You need some winning. You need a run through the playoffs to create excitement in the market at some point. And the Atlanta Thrashers, and I guess it was maybe 10 years or somewhere in thereabouts, never really had it. They had one trip to the playoffs, and they were swept in four games by the Rangers. So, so all that said, it is a big market. I've been told that the people that are interested there are looking to put a building in a much more favorable location for a hockey team. So I can't, you know, I don't want to rule out things. And you know, I really think 32 teams is the perfect number for the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, money talks. And there are people in, you know, different places in North America and certainly in the United States, Salt Lake City and perhaps in Atlanta and some other places that, you know, would be interested in having a team. And so we'll see. I mean, it is a business, and money does always talk. And if people want to, if there are groups that want to pay that kind of entry fee, I'm sure that the other owners are happy to welcome that those funds into their bank accounts. So, so we'll see how things play out. But, you know, you asked me, you know, I am kind of surprised because usually it's you don't really see it would be really kind of surprising to see a market have a third go-round. I don't know if we've seen that in any pro sport in North America, but easily I could be wrong on that because there's a lot of teams.
Especially when you have other markets that seem to make more sense, like Houston, 10th most populated city in the country, good sports town, history with the Arrows and Gordie Howe. I know, you know, I get the Quebec City. Listen, I'd love to see a team go back to Quebec, but can you have eight Canadian franchises? It's harder.
I just don't foresee that. I think the biggest problem to me with these things, and this is like you bring up that, you know, we're talking about Atlanta, we're talking about Houston. You know, obviously the situation in Arizona is critical once again, and it's really unfortunate because I think they have a really good fan base of hockey fans. And just the rink has never been in the right place, really. You know, if they could ever get one built in the Scottsdale area or in the area they were trying to build that one, you know, with the bond initiative or the yes no vote that failed, I think it could be a really successful franchise. But you've got to have the wherewithal. You have to have the owners that have the deep pockets. You have to have the arena. I mean, in Houston right now, those are things that, you know, I don't think you have right now. So it's you have to have someone that really wants to spend the money and has the money to work with and has the ability to have a building where it can generate the revenue that you need today. I mean, being out here in Vegas, Don, I mean, I know you've been here on a number of occasions as well. It's just the arena is spectacular. And it is just, you know, I mean, it is a revenue machine for this franchise. And so, you know, this hockey in Vegas would not be working if they didn't have that kind of facility. I mean, it wouldn't work in most places when you don't have a facility that really can generate that kind of revenue and can do all the things. This is just a wonderful building. And, you know, just down the road, you see the Alliance Stadium where the football team plays. And
right.
It's, you know, that looks magnificent as well. So that's the key, in whether it's Atlanta or Houston or wherever, is you have to, you know, Salt Lake City, I mean, it's another place where you hear someone who's interested in bringing hockey, but you have to have the building and you have to have the financial wherewithal. If you have that, you have a chance to make it work. And in Canada, you know, and you know what you have to have as well is you have to have a population that can support the team and what it costs to go to games now. I mean, it's a different world than it was when we were growing up, when I paid like $4 for a box seat at Yankee Stadium, and I could sit like pretty close to the action. And, you know, it's quite different now. So in a place like Quebec, you know, do they have enough in terms of population that could support a ticket, you know, a ticket price that is significantly different than it was?
Right.
30, 40, 50 years ago. So I don't see it. I've always said the only way it goes back to Quebec is if the Ottawa Senators somehow move there, or another one of the Canadian teams opted to move there. And then the Montreal Canadiens would have a say in this, I believe, too, so as a territorial issue. So we'll, you know, we watch these things, but, you know, I don't foresee it going back to Quebec anytime soon.
All right, one last thing before we let you go. Momentum now. Looks like it's going to be Peter Laviolette with the Rangers. Of course, the story around that is what took so long, and reports are they were waiting out what was going to happen in Pittsburgh, waiting out what was happening in Toronto. There's two ways of looking at this, EJ, that Laviolette could indeed be the third choice because they were waiting to see what was going to happen with Sullivan and Keefe. Or the way I look at it is, hey, you've got a general manager, and Chris Drury wanted to do his due diligence. He wanted to talk to Sullivan. He wanted to talk to Keefe. He, you know, if Joel Quenneville was allowed back in by the NHL, talk to him too, that maybe Laviolette was always going to be the choice, but why not talk to as many people as you can, pick their brain? So how do you take what took so long to get to the guy that seemed like the obvious choice from the beginning?
Well, it does seem odd. I mean, because they could have hired Peter at any time. I mean, doing your due diligence is actually really smart. And if you were waiting, you know, to talk to Patrick Waugh per se, because Quebec was in the Memorial Cup, or if you were waiting for maybe some kind of conclusion with Joel Quenneville, I can understand that. And waiting for Mike Sullivan certainly makes sense. I don't know why in the world you'd be waiting to find out about Sheldon Keefe, because right. He won nothing. In 5 years with a pretty good roster, literally one playoff series. I mean, it's just the reality. I'm just giving you a fact. So I don't know why you would be waiting there when you have Peter Laviolette, who's won a cup and went to finals and has a world of experience. So in the end, you know, if it is Peter, I think he's a good coach. He'll come in and do a good job. He knows how to do it. They have a terrific roster. I think they could learn a little bit from the Golden Knights in terms of the slotting. I don't think you need 9 top 6 forwards. You need 6. I think you need pieces around them that make it work. I think you probably need to get a little, you know, maybe just a little more size throughout your roster. But, you know, I think a lot of the pieces are there for the Rangers. They have a great goalie. And so if it's Peter, you know, I think he'll do a terrific job because, you know, he's done a terrific job just about everywhere he's been. And this year in Washington, I thought he did a really good job under very difficult circumstances with a lot of different injury problems throughout the year.
You know, Michael Kay asked me on the show, he's like, well, if he's such a great coach, why is he on so many teams? And I'm like, well, I think he comes with an expiration date. Most NHL coaches do, right? And it just, you kind of wear out your welcome after a while, but you cannot ignore the resume of what he's able to do almost instantaneously when he joins a franchise.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, is you're right. I mean, guys do bounce around. I mean, Michael's right. It's a good observation that guys bounce around a little bit more maybe in hockey. I can't really speak to what goes on in the other sports as much as I used to. I remember Billy Martin managed several teams throughout his career. And, you know, the Yankees obviously several times. But I would say that, you know, I talked to Bruce Cassidy out here. And it was such a good situation for Bruce. It's kind of funny. I mean, Wednesday will be a year to the day that he got hired by the Vegas Golden Knights. I think he was unemployed for 8 days or something when he got let go by the Bruins. And, you know, Bruce has a different perspective now. At the time, I'm sure he was very disappointed and upset to be let go by the Bruins. And, you know, a little bit late, you know, it just seems in talking to people after the fact, it was like, you know, Peter's time or Bruce's time was up there. Like the players had kind of, you know, they had enough of him. And in the end, he probably had enough of them to a certain degree. And he said to me, you know, last week, he said, you know, maybe all coaches should just have a 5-year deal. He goes, after 5 years, you know, the players, you know, lose you and you maybe lose them and everybody needs a fresh start. And he just kind of joked about that. But there's probably something to that, especially in this era, because it's hard to continue to play at a high level all the time. And it's just also hard to, you know, to have that for players. Sometimes they need a refresh. They need a new message. And I think the coach does too. And I think Bruce has been spectacular here in Vegas. And, you know, I don't think it would have gone near as well. I'm of the mind that Mike Sullivan last year, when Pittsburgh had to make a decision, I think they would have been probably better off making a change. And not because Mike isn't a great coach. He's a terrific coach. I just think that it probably was time for something different there, and they didn't opt to do that. And they're in a different situation today. So we'll see what happens with Peter, but I think, you know, if he ends up being the Rangers coach, he'll do a good job.
All right, EJ, have a great call tonight.
Thank you.
And safe travels, whether it be home or Sunrise.
Okay. I think we'll be headed home, but we'll see. And listen, you take care of yourself, too.
All right. Thank you so much for this. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, buddy. Yeah.
All right. That is the great, and I mean great, EJ Raddick. He's got NHL International. Call a game 5 tonight from Vegas. Golden Knights can lift the Stanley Cup. Panthers trying to force a game 6. Yeah, I have a feeling it's kind of over. Just like with the Heat last night in Denver, just it's a nice run, but the better team you're starting to see is the Vegas Golden Knights, and that was a great win in game 3 for the Panthers to avoid being, you know, possibly swept the other night, but you know, the Panthers are giving it their all. I wouldn't be shocked if they won the game tonight, but it just feels like everything is in the cards, literally and figuratively, for the Vegas Golden Knights to get their first Stanley Cup in 6 years. How crazy is that? You think of all these franchises that have been around forever and haven't won. You know, the Leafs have not even been to a Stanley Cup final, never mind winning a cup, since 67. And then you see the Vegas Golden Knights come in 2018 and go to a Stanley Cup final their first year, and in year 6, possibility of winning a Stanley Cup. It is, you know, unbelievable, taking on a Florida Panther team that came into the league 30 years ago, and this is only their second finals appearance, same as Vegas, and still looking for that first Stanley Cup. It's pretty crazy that it's happening so quickly, but you can't say that it's not well-deserved. All right, we'll be back again. I'm going to put something together on Thursday, just because we've got a remote tomorrow. We're going to be at Citi Field tomorrow on the Michael Kay Show, so that means a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. So why don't we either recap the season on Thursday or possibly preview a Game 6. So we'll be back with you again for a Game Misconduct on Thursday. Want to get in touch with me at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Best way to do that. Thanks to EJ Raddick. Thanks to RJ Santillo. Thanks to Ray Deanan. Did a great job today with the podcast. We'll talk to you again on Thursday. This was the Tuesday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.